The roads are still self-quarantining. They don't have COVID, but Elizabeth has the flu. And you know how stuff like that goes through a family, so they thought it would be better for them to kind of maybe stay home this morning instead of possibly passing it to others. And so Zane has asked me if I take this class this morning, and I asked him if it would be okay if we just continue, since he promised a part two to this lesson about dancing. I thought we would go ahead and do that, since maybe that was already on your mind this morning. We're going to talk a little more about dancing this morning. I don't know what Zane has in mind for next week. Maybe dancing part three, maybe something else. I don't know. We'll find out from Zane next week. But we're going to continue talking about dancing this morning. We're going to also maybe, we're not going to dwell a lot on some stuff that we talked about last week with Zane, but we are going to maybe kind of review it just a little bit. Dancing is it doesn't matter what kind of household you grow up in, you're going to encounter it at some point in your life, right? In fact, our kids do a lot. I remember when our daughters were in elementary school, they started to organize little dances for the kids, you know, and then when they got to junior high and then high school, it got even more so. And sometimes those kind of dances can be a point of peer pressure for young people. It's almost a test of popularity, right? Who are you going to prom with? You know, what kind of dress did you get? Oh, we got a limo. You know, there's all kinds of stuff and expense, you know, not just in prom, but in all kinds of other stuff. And then sometimes it even gets worse from there. Let me just ask you, if you had to define dancing, how would you define it? What's the definition of dancing? Happiness? Okay, that's what I'm looking for. More of a clinical definition. How would you define dancing? You know, so everybody knows now that Randy has a happy dance, right? Yeah, we're going to ask you to demonstrate that in a minute. But that's all it is, right? Dancing is just some kind of rhythmic movement of your body, right? So in and of itself, is there anything wrong with dancing? Okay. Is that what we usually think of when we think of the modern dance, though? No, it's different, right? I mean, is there dancing in the Bible? Sure there is. What instances can you think of? David? Okay. Why did his wife Michael get all mad at him for doing that? I don't know, maybe she thought he looked like a fool. You know, she said, you're doing this in front of the women, which is something else. I've got a Bible dictionary that tells me that usually, according to Jewish tradition, that kind of dancing was done by women. And we see that. We see, Miriam, right? After God had delivered them in the book of Exodus from Pharaoh, Miriam, Moses' sister, comes out dancing and she gives us praise to God, right? What other dancing can we remember from the Bible? Okay. What was the deal with her dance? Was she dancing? Was she doing, you know, Randy's happy dance? Okay. What can we infer from that? God gave us minds to think with. What can we infer from the fact that she pleased Herod and the men who were with him? Okay, that there was something more going on, right, than just doing a happy dance or even a dance in celebration for Herod's birthday. That's what the whole occasion was, right? There's something more going on by this dance that she did. So we can see where there are some dances that are done in praise to God, and Herodias's daughter's dance, according to Josephus, her name was Salome. Salome's dance was different, right? It aroused somehow the desire of her own stepfather and of the men who were with her. Okay. Now, is that more in line with what we would think of in the modern dances in our day and time? There's a sensual component to it, right? Last week, we looked at some definitions in Galatians chapter 5. Let's head over there. Now, we're not going to be as minute with this as Zane was last week, but I want you to notice in Galatians 5 and in verse 19, Paul says, now the deeds of the flesh. Now, stop. When he says deeds of the flesh, is that a good thing? Okay, this is, in other words, this is something to avoid, right? The deeds of the flesh, he says, are evident, which are sexual immorality, impurity, we talked about that for a while, sensuality. What is sensuality? What did Zane remind us that it meant last week? Okay. It appeals to the senses, right? It arouses us in some way. And apparently in a way that is something that Christians should avoid, because he says it's a deed of the flesh, right? It's a work of the flesh. It's something that we should avoid. He tells us, after going through a whole list of things, he says in verse 21, and things like these. So does Paul have to mention every act that covers something inappropriate for Christians? When he says things like these, do you think Paul wants us to use our own minds to consider for ourselves what things would be inappropriate for Christians? I think so. I mean, that's why God gave us. I mean, we talk about that even in how we establish Bible authority, right? There's command, there's example, and what's the third one? Necessary inference, right? Coming to a necessary conclusion by everything that we know concerning the Word of God. And so when he says things like these, what things like these can you think of? There's a word that's not in this list that the New Testament uses quite a bit in a bunch of different ways. It's the word lust, right? Now, sometimes the Greek word for lust is translated strong desire. In fact, it's the word that is used when Jesus told his disciples, I have strongly desired to eat this Passover with you. But when it's translated lust, it's used in a completely different set of circumstances. It's used to get us to realize that there's something untoward about that kind of desire that's inordinate, that's inappropriate for a Christian. Let me just ask you, does dancing promote lust? Does the modern dance promote lust? By the way, I love polka music. Our radio station has got polka hour on every afternoon, and I listen to it. Well, let's talk about square dancing for a minute. I know of people who used to square dance, and they quit doing it because they felt that other fellows were getting too handsy with their wives. Because you're passing partners around from one to another. And although it's done very quickly, just like as in anything, really, somebody with the wrong idea could do the wrong thing. And what does the Bible tell us about putting ourselves in situations where potentially something could go wrong? Okay? Keep that in mind, because we're going to come back to that. There was an article that came out in Reader's Digest. I like to read Reader's Digest. I don't get it anymore since we moved. It got lost in the mail, I guess. But there was one that was in there called Confessions of a Dance School Dropout. And the guy was talking about how he quit going to dance lessons when he used to do it all the time with his wife. And so his wife complained, well, why did you stop doing this? You used to love going to dances with me. She said, remember how you used to practically beg me to dance when we were first dating? If you hate dancing so much, how do you explain that? He said, this is how. Lust. It was the quickest way to get my arms around you in a fashion that was acceptable to the community. This was square dancing that they're talking about. I remember when I was in school, we used to do square dancing, right? Now, as kids, we didn't think of it. It was what we did in PE, and I thought it was the most boring way to pass PE. I would much rather would have been playing basketball or something else. But, you know, when weather outside was cold, we used to be square dancing on the gym floor, right? But that's what I'm saying. I mean, it is so accepted by the community that they are ingraining this into our children that it's okay. That handling someone you don't know physically is acceptable. So, you think of the modern dance is what we're talking about, right? The way, and when we say that, we're usually talking about young people, right? Think about the names that they have for dances now. You know, thanks to Miley Cyrus, we have twerking. I mean, it's not just a weird word, it even sounds bad, right? Grinding. Freaking. They immediately conjure images of what the thing is about, right? Okay. And are they things that we ought to be thinking about? I mean, Philippians chapter 4 reminds us that there are far better things to occupy our minds with. Things that are pure, things that are noble, things that are right. Paul says, dwell on these things. Now, is it fair, if we're trying to dwell on those things, to impose things that are not noble, things that are not pure, things that are not right on our children, on our young people, allowing them to do this? I don't think there's any question that dancing promotes lust. You know, especially the modern dance. And if you've seen some of that going on, it's inappropriate for anybody. You know, non-Christian or Christian. I wasn't raised as a Christian. And so I did a lot of whatever I wanted to do when I was growing up. And some of that stuff was going to dancing. And there's no set of steps. You just kind of, you know, you let it all hang out. You go wild, right? Well, things have changed a little bit now. And now there are some moves that are decidedly sexual in nature. In fact, I think last week Cheryl was saying it's like sex with your clothes on. That's what it looks like. And I know this is uncomfortable for some of us to talk about, but if we're going to talk about this subject in a way that drives us to a conclusion, then we need to be honest about it, right? So, are there some questions maybe that we can ask ourselves when we're thinking about either dancing ourselves or allowing our young people to engage in it? Let me start with one, since we're talking about lust. Will dancing cause me to lust? When I used to go to dances when I was a kid, girls wore tight dresses or tight jeans. Something that would say, dance with me, right? Something appealing, you know? And they obviously knew what 17-year-old guys were thinking, because they got asked for a lot of dances. And then when they're out there moving themselves in a way that's highly suggestive, will dancing cause me to lust? That's a one-word answer, right? Yes. Will my dancing cause someone else to love? Not the way I do it, apparently, but will my activities cause someone else to have impure thoughts? They can, right? So is that what we want to do with our influence? Okay, can I say two things about that? One is Ecclesiastes 3 says there's a time to dance, right? Okay, so that indicates that maybe somehow, sometimes it could be appropriate. But there's also the flip side of that, right? There could be times when it is inappropriate, right? Or ways that it could be inappropriate. As far as Salome is concerned, as far as Herodias' daughter, yeah, Herod was a jerk. There's no doubt about that. That was his family history. But I don't think that she is completely without guilt, because she was the one who did the dance. Now, I'm not saying that, okay, maybe she came out and she only intended to celebrate Herod's birthday. by doing some kind of celebratory dance. And every commentator who has said something about that could be wrong. But there was something in it that propelled Herod and his drunken friends to think the way that they did. Now they certainly don't escape blame. I agree with you. They don't escape blame. But there's something to be said for everyone who's involved in an appropriate dance, whether it's the onlookers or the one who's doing it. So I guess, yeah, we're kind of on the same page. You had more to say. Do you think the literal definition for the word dance is to leap? You know? Who of us hasn't jumped for joy? You know, who of us hasn't done something exclamatory in a way that one projects the happiness of the occasion or the joy that you have? When I was baptized, I was baptized in a muddy river, and when I came up, I jumped and I threw my arm in the air, right? Because I was so happy to finally be forgiven, right? Now that was a one leap dance, I guess you could call it, right? So are there situations where we find ourselves just bursting with joy, and it exhibits ourselves in the way that we throw our bodies? Yeah. Is that the modern dance? No. I don't believe so. Sure. Okay, you're talking about really something that's really important. We're asking questions about dancing. Okay, will it cause me or somebody else to lust? Yeah, it can. What about our influence? Right? What did Jesus say? Let's look at some scripture. Go over to Matthew chapter 5. Matthew 5. And I'm sorry, Cheryl, I wasn't trying to cut you off, but I'm kind of piggybacking on what you're talking about. In Matthew 5, let's read verses 13 through 16. Jason, would you read those? Are you there? Matthew 5, 13 through 16. Caught you reading the Sunday funds. Something you can never escape, and it doesn't matter if you're Christian or not, is your influence upon others. Somebody, somewhere is looking to you. And when you say, I'm a Christian, well, you set yourself up in a position to be observed, right? Because generally people want to see if this thing that you proclaim to be better than any other way to live on earth has any real impact on you. They want to know if when you say, Jesus lives in my heart, okay, so what? What does that mean to you? What does that mean practically? How does it cause you to live, right? Jesus says here that we're a city set on a hill. I think what he means by that is that we have set ourselves up to be looked at by others. Okay? And we do. When you tell people I'm a Christian, that's what you've done, for better or for worse. We're gonna look at you. And he says, you're salt on one hand. What is salt? What does salt do? Enhances flavor. Okay. Preserves. Okay. So let's talk about those two things real quick before we get into a third property of salt. How do Christians enhance flavor and preserve our society? Or people who know us, those whom we have influence over. Okay. All those good things, right? Love, mercy, grace. We want to manifest those things. Right? Because they've been manifested to us. Okay? Does that mean tolerance of all things? Was Jesus full of love, mercy, and grace? Did he tolerate everything? How can we preserve the world or enhance the flavor of our little corner of it in a way that shows love, mercy, and grace? Consistency. We're going to get into shining our light in a second. I want to piggyback on that. Jessica? That brings me, actually, thank you for the springboard, to the, remember, the third quality of salt that I was going to mention. You ever get salt in your eye? It's an irritant, right? And sometimes that's how Christians are when we try to live in a way that exudes the love of Christ and His intolerance for sin. Right? It irritates people. People who don't see it that way yet. Sometimes you can rub people the wrong way when you're trying to make a strong stand for something that you believe is Christ's way. And that can be irritating to people. It can be difficult. Cindy mentioned, light. And that's what Jesus says in verse 16. Your light. So let your light shine in such a way. Now that little phrase, in such a way, is important because it means that there is some strategy in how we let our light shine. That we're doing it, he says, in such a way that they may see your good works and glorify your Father who is in heaven. Now let's laser focus this in. How can we let our light shine concerning this idea of dancing in such a way that people see what we are standing for is good and right and brings honor to God? So how are we going to do this? How are we going to show what's good and right? And when Jesus says in Matthew 5:16 that people ought to see what we do and glorify God, does that mean that they're always going to convert? Could it possibly mean that by the way you live your life, by the consistency that Cindy was talking about, that people will see that, yes, Christ living in you really does have some impact. And He directs the choices that you make. And you do your best to live according to those choices. And those choices are directed by God. And it's part of the honor here, the glory that Jesus is talking about. People will glorify God when they see me living by the dictates of His Word, whether they know it's His Word or not. But if I'm consistent in my living towards Him, they'll see, hopefully, that He's the one who directs my choices. And He directs how I raise my children. I don't want us to get off, you know, I know that there's some dancing that is appropriate. Like, I get that. I'm talking about the dancing that we let our kids do in gyms and halls and stuff like that. Usually when this kind of stuff comes up, prom comes up, right? And sometimes that's a touchy subject for people. I've been to congregations where the Sunday morning after prom, some young ladies showed up in their strapless dresses that they obviously bought for prom the night before. And it had been obvious that they had gone. Now, what they did when they were there, I don't know. I'm willing to give, you know, the benefit of the doubt. Maybe they found some other kind of thing to do. But at the very least, it gave people pause to wonder about the previous night's activities. Let me ask you this. When we think about the modern dance, and all those adjectives that we threw out there concerning what they call it today, is it spiritually, is it spiritual or is it worldly? Okay. When you have a young woman with a strapless gown that maybe is slit up the sides, which is a lot of what the style is. I mean, I don't go around buying dresses, but you know, that's what you hear a lot about. And a young fella who spent some money on a tux and maybe even a limo. And they're going out and they don't have to be in until 3-4 in the morning because everybody stays out all night on prom night, right? And they're going to a place where they're going to be holding each other tight and doing all kinds of suggestive moves even when they're not holding on to each other. What do you think that young man is thinking? Let's be honest. I've been a young man a long time ago. Okay? I never went to a prom, but I've been to dances. And I know what I was thinking. And it wasn't God. Cindy? There used to be a magazine called Your Prom. It's out of print. It has been for about 10 years or so. But I saw an old article. I didn't used to get the magazine, okay? But I saw it on the internet. And there was an article in there called What Sex Got to Do with It. And one young man whom they had interviewed said, I've heard guys say that if you can't get it the night of prom, then you never will. So are there some expectations that I'm not saying every young person has, okay? I'm not broad brushing everybody. But are there some expectations that maybe some have? I'm sorry, Jessica? Yeah, okay. Like I said, I'm not broad brushing everything. But I am trying to give Christians something to think about. We talked about influence. We talked about the fact that the modern dance is decidedly worldly and not spiritual. We talked about how pressures of prom night specifically can weigh heavy on young people and could cause them to make some decidedly bad choices. For some people, the whole idea of dance is just questionable, you know. And Romans 14 tells us if you have a question about it, then you shouldn't do it, right? Because if you can't do it convinced that it's the right thing to do, then to you it is sin, right? And I've got, what, about a minute left, Bruce? Okay. There's probably a lot more about this than we can say in a minute. And I had planned to maybe talk about some reasons to justify dancing. And we talked about some. You know, there are some times when it may be appropriate for the right kind of dance. We have been focused on the wrong kind of dance for a reason. Because it's what our young people are subjected to. Right? Now, whatever reason you can think of to justify couples dancing, you never see that in the Bible, by the way. You do see dancing, but men and women dancing together in the Bible, at least what I've been able to find, is non-existent. I could be wrong. If we're trying to steer our young people into a more godly way of living, then we have to do the hard thing as parents sometimes. And we have to be consistent at it. And it's going to make them mad. And it's going to cause them maybe to resent us for a little while. Because all the rest of their peers, all the rest of their friends are getting to do something that is obviously a hoot. It's a lot of fun. Dancing is a blast. If you can do it. But is it appropriate? The Bible talks a lot about the appropriateness. Things that are proper and fitting for Christians. And so those are some things that you can just think about when you're thinking about the dance. And I don't know, like I said, if Zane is going to continue this line of thought. I think we covered it pretty well, but I don't know what he's going to do. So that's up to Zane. But anyway, I appreciate your input. Thank you.